Krishna. So, we're continuing with chapter 9
of the fourth canto. Govardhan Vijay. That's Govardhan Lal Jai, and Sankishan. Yeah, and Sankishan. No. We got up to around about text 19:20 last week. What's that? What? 17. 17, right. Oh, good. Oh. Oh, yeah.
It's trying to trick you.
Yeah, well, it's good to see someone's actually paying attention. Some preaching application aspects to what we were discussing about the example of Dhruva Maharaj returning back to Godhead in spite of his performing devotional service with material motives. You know, how's that relevant for preaching? And you know, you want to give reference to verses 9 to 10, which we covered, verses 29 to 31 and 32 to 35, and additional references also. So, you know, that's one of the main features of our discussion. And of course, you know, just as far as personal application, we were actually just looking at Dhruva Maharaj's prayers, 14 to 17, in particular last week. A lot of very nice meditations there. So, one of the things we'll also look at as far as something which is a preaching application meaning that, you know, how it how something can relate, or how we can relate to other persons. When they're discussing, they might ask the question that, you know, can someone be very opulent and be a devotee? Or sometimes people used to, they criticise Srila Prabhupada, they may criticise some of the gurus, they may criticise some of the devotees if they see them displaying opulence. So that's one of the first things we'll look at. Now, describes here in preaching application that preaching application means, you know, one of the aims of systematic sastric study is we're trying to enhance our desire and ability to preach effectively. So, of course, in this instance, it's dealing with probably our ability to preach effectively, you know, how to discuss these issues of opulence. Has anyone come across situations where someone may have challenged them about the opulence that they may have criticised the devotee, seeing that they have some opulence and thinking that it was out of place? Anyone ever come across that? Can I get you to speak up a little louder?
Yeah.
Just so they can hear at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in Urban Yoga one time.
Yeah.
And one person came there for the first time and hoping that place is like a spiritual place. And then he looked into the office and he saw the Wi-Fi thing and he was surprised.
Yes.
And oh, this is, what is Wi-Fi doing here?
Yeah.
He did not criticize, but he was.
Yes.
Surprise.
Yes, that's right.
So I tried to explain very simply that we're using it for spiritual purpose. So.
And was he happy with that explanation?
Yes,
yeah,
he was.
Yeah. But it does have to be explained, doesn't it?
Yes.
Otherwise, of course, if they go away and perhaps, if you notice some surprise and don't take the trouble to explain it, they may go away and think the wrong way if they're... consciousness is not corrected. So, that's why it's a preaching application. We do have to develop that ability to effectively reach others and communicate with them and help them to understand Krishna consciousness. Most people have a very artificial understanding of spiritual life. You can almost guarantee that they're going to have the wrong conception about everything to do with spiritual life. So, let's have a look at that. So, the great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, when Dhrita Maharaj, who had good intentions in his heart, finished his prayer, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees and servants, congratulated him, speaking as follows. The Personality of Godhead said, 'My dear Dhruva, son of the king, you have executed pious vows, and I also know that within your and I also know the desire within your heart. Although your desire is very ambitious and very difficult to fulfill, I shall favour you with its fulfillment or good fortune unto you.'" Report: the Lord is so merciful to his devotee that he immediately said to Dhruva Maharaj, "Let there be all good fortune for you." Now, the fact is that Dhruva was very much afraid in his mind, for he had aspired after material benefit in discharging his devotional service, and this was hampering him from reaching the stage of love of God. That's confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 2:44. Dhruva wanted a kingdom that would be far better than Brahmaloka. This was a natural desire for a Kshatriya. He was also only 5 years old. And in his childish way, he desired to have a kingdom far greater than his father's, grandfather's or great-grandfather's. Therefore, he wanted to excel even Lord Brahma. Now the Lord knew this childish ambition, but he was going to be assured Dhruva that he could give him something more exalted than Lord Brahma. So that's that's almost impossible. But and the Lord assured Dhruva Maharaj that Dhruva would not be bereft of the Lord's love. He encouraged Dhruva not to be worried that he childishly had material desires and at the same time had the pure aspiration to be a great devotee. Now generally, the Lord does not award a pure devotee material opulence, even though he may desire it. But Dhruva Maharaj's case was different. The Lord knew that he was such a great devotee that in spite of having material opulence, he would never be deviated from love of God. This example illustrates that a highly qualified devotee can have the facility of material enjoyment and at the same time execute love of God. This, however, was a special case for Dhruva Maharaj. So there's some significant points there. Now generally, when we consider someone as having material desires and wanting to advance in spiritual life, we generally consider their position to be, you know, somewhat immature on the spiritual path. Here, the Lord's saying that he knew that he was such a great devotee that in spite of having material opulence, he would never be deviated from love of God. And this example illustrates that a highly qualified devotee can have the facility material enjoyment and at the same time execute love of God. So here it's saying that in some cases, you know, which Prabhupada points, you know, the Dhruva Maharaj is a special case, and you know, for some devotees, generally the Lord doesn't give devotees material opulence, knowing that it will bewilder them. But for some, he does. And he does so because he understands that they're actually quite a, you know, a highly qualified devotee. So, you know, therefore, it makes it it can make it very difficult for people to understand who is a highly, you know, qualified devotee and who is not, according to the material opulence. You know, so if we just judge that when we see someone who has perhaps came to Krishna consciousness with strong material desires, and they developed great material opulence, we shouldn't necessarily conclude that they're not necessarily a highly qualified devotee, that they're automatically a sort of materialistic devotee. You know, there's sort of exceptions there. They're exceptional cases. As, you know, the general rule, as Prabhupada points out in this verse, that Krishna tries to, he knows that he tries not to give too much material opulence to devotees because they do become bewildered. But there are exceptions to that. And of course, therefore, how would we know? How would we know if we see a devotee, or some devotees, who have significant material opulence? And how would we know that they're either highly qualified despite that material opulence, or that they may actually just, you know, be somewhat quite neophyte and having, you know, too strong material desires? How would we be able to distinguish?
To have been devotees for a long time, so there are a lot of devotees.
They've been devotees. So how do you define, what do you mean by if they've been devotees? Is that, what is that?
As in, they use their material opulence.
Right, so for a long, you know, so that they're literally using that material opulence, you know, successfully and you know, long period of time in the service. Because, yeah, that's right. That's the, yeah.
You know,
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Ambish.
Yeah. Alfred Ford. Yeah. Yeah. So if they actually utilize that in the service of the Lord, and it doesn't actually detract from their love of God, but actually enhances their, you know, it's not an obstacle at all for their love of God. They still, you know, their love of God is quite significantly there, you know. Love of God, of course, you know, Prabhupada sums that up in a simple way. It's not necessarily that they're always having ecstatic symptoms and, you know, shedding tears and what have you, but Prabhupada describes, you know, for our basic understanding of love of God, is that a person is, you know, well, they're always trying to glorify the Lord's holy name, they're always trying to glorify Krishna, they're always, you know, with their words, their intelligence, their works, their act. You know, when someone loves someone, you know, they're always absorbed in that person's glories, and they always want that person to be happy. You know, so they're always establishing Krishna's interests, you know, and glories. So that's when we say love of God. That's really the best practical manifestation. So if they have material opulence, we see that they're always glorifying Krishna with that opulence. You know, they're using that opulence in such a way that Krishna's name is spreading, Krishna's fame, his instructions, his books, and, you know, like that. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily. It's very hard to detect from, because it's ecstatic symptoms and tears in the eyes and things like that, that can be, you know, copied.
Imitation.
Feigned, yeah.
Imitation.
But this can't be, you know. So therefore it describes in the Nectar of Devotion that there are nine symptoms, anubhavas, which in one sense, although they're sometimes considered to be preliminary to love of God, but at the same time, when a person does have love of God, those symptoms still manifest, you know, and they're actually a more significant way to detect that someone actually has love of God, rather than just the ecstatic symptoms being there. So, you know, it means that people can't, sometimes people who are quite materialistic, and their devotion is quite neophyte, they may quote Dhruva Maharaj almost as if to say, yes, you can be a great devotee and have material opulence. As if Dhruva Maharaj did it, I'm doing it, so, you know, don't say I'm not a great devotee. Then we would have to see whether the love of God is there along with the opulence. And we would want to see them, you know, say actively, you know, permanently, just always utilizing that opulence to glorify the Lord. All right, yeah. Okay, so So he describes in verse 20 to 21, I shall award you the glowing planet known as the pole star, which will continue to exist even after the dissolution at the end of the millennium. No one has ever ruled this planet, which is surrounded by all the solar systems. It's surrounded by all the solar systems, planets and stars. All the luminaries in the sky circumambulate this planet just as bulls tread around a central pole for the purpose of crushing grains. Keeping the pole star to their right, all the stars inhabited by the great sages like Dharma, Agni, Kashyapa and Shukra circumambulate this planet, which continues to exist even after the dissolution of all others. So the pole star existed before its occupation by Dhruva Maharaj. It had no predominating deity though. So, you know, he wanted the best, Dhruva wanted the best of planets, and although this was a childish prayer, the Lord satisfied his demand. There's the specific significance of this planet is that until the entire universe is annihilated, this planet will remain. Even during the devastation which takes place during the night of Lord Brahma. There are two kinds of dissolutions, one during the night of Lord Brahma and one at the end of Brahma's life. At the end of Brahma's life, selected personalities go back home, back to Godhead. Dhruva Maharaj is one of them. The Lord assured Dhruva that he would exist beyond the partial dissolution of this universe. Thus, at the end of the complete dissolution, Dhruva Maharaj would go directly to Vaikuntha, to a spiritual planet in the spiritual sky. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the core comments in this connection, the Dhruva Loka is one of the lokas like Svetadvipa, Mathura and Dwarka. They are all eternal places in the kingdom of Godhead, which is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Tad Dham Paramam, and in the Vedas, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sadavishanti Suryo. The words Parastat Kalpa Vashinam, transcendental to the planets inhabited after the dissolution, refer to the Vaikuntha planets. In other words, Dhruva Maharaj, promotion to the Vaikuntha Lokas was guaranteed with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So,
is this Dhruva Loka the same place where Vishnu lives? As in the Shishira Lakshya Vishnu, in the material world.
No, well, he's saying it's Dhruva Loka is one of the lokas like Svetadvip, Mathura and Dwarka. Svetadvip is where Vishnu resides, and he's saying that it's like that. It's not the same planet, but it's like that. There are eternal places in the kingdom of God. Dhruva Loka is one of the lokas like that.
Still in the material universe, Dhruva Loka.
Yeah, these spiritual lokas can exist within the material universe, but they're not material planets. Which means that when all the material planets are destroyed, they remain. So says that a small child may demand something from his father which his father has never given to anyone else, yet out of affection the father offers it to the child. Similarly, this unique planet, Dhruva Loka, was offered to Maharaj Dhruva. So, any comments on that? So after the dissolution, you know, when Lord Brahma's day is over, Dhruva Maharaj will go back to Godhead. Yes, that's what Prabhupada is saying. He says, Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti, the core comments in this connection, the Dhruva Loka is one of the lokas like Svetadvik, Mathura and Dwarka. So
is that the previous sentence it says, in the Vaikuntha Loka or in the spiritual sky, but in the material world, the pole star is the Dhruva Loka, and then Svetadvik is a separate planet, or so that vaguely remember reading somewhere in one of the purports that in the material world on that pole star planet there is an island on which the Shiro Chaivi are in the real portion in the temple. So I'm not sure.
I think we'll come across that later maybe.
It's sometimes described as the halo of the universe, right? I've also heard it in those terms. Let me just look at the exact commentary by Viśvanātha Chakravarti the core. Let's have a look. Of Vishwanath Chakravarti, of Prabhupada's purpose? Have a look. It's 25.
In the Divine Verse, it seems like it's the same
plan. Verse 25. My dear Drew, after your material life in this body, you will go to my planet, which is always offered obeisances by the residents of all other planetary systems. It is situated above the planets of the seven rishis, and having gone there, you will never have to come back again to this material world. So Prabhupada says, my abode, so he says, therefore Dhruvaloka or the pole star is the abode of Lord Vishnu within this material world. Upon it there is an ocean of milk, and within that ocean there is an island known as Faitivi. Dhruvaloka, or the pole star, is the abode of Lord Vishnu within the material world. Upon it there is an ocean of milk. And within that ocean is the island known as Faitivi. It is clearly indicated that this planet is situated above the seven planetary systems of the rishis, and because this planet is Vishnu-like, it is worshipped by all other planetary systems. It may be questioned here what will happen to the planet known as Dhruvaloka at the time of the dissolution of this universe. The answer is simple. Dhruvaloka remains, like other Vaikuntha lokas, beyond this universe. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, has commented in this connection that the very word Nirvatita indicates that this planet is eternal. Then it says, the next verse says, after being worshipped and honoured by the boy, Dhruva Maharaj, after offering his abode, Lord Vishnu, on the back of Guru, returned to his abode as Dhruva Maharaj looked on. From this verse, it appears that Lord Vishnu awarded Dhruva Maharaj the same abode in which he resides. So, I'll read you the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti before. He says, I give you that residence which is eternal, Dhruva. Dhruva. Yes. Dhruva means eternal. You know, it's fixed. Fixed. Or you can use it also in the sense of eternal. I give you that residence which is eternal, possessing the zodiac belt of planets, constellation and stars, which are like oxen circling around the central pillar to which they are tied. So when we, you know, in the translation describes the oxen circling the central pillar, they are the various constellations, you know, in the metaphor, and stars and what have you, like circling the pole star. This remains fixed for the duration of Brahma's life for those living for that duration. At the time of final destruction, some say that Dhruva ascends to Mahavaikuntha.
Open up again.
So let's just, while we're waiting for this, we'll go back to those other few verses. So we'll come back to this discussion. We just have to start on the laptop again. Verse 22. Describe that after your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world for 36,000 years, and all your senses will continue to be as strong as they are now. You will never become old. So, of course, considering people live for 100,000 years in Satyayuga, Dhruva Maharaj ruling the world for 36,000 years was quite possible. Sometime in the future, your brother Uttama will go hunting in the forest, and while absorbed in hunting, he will be killed. Your stepmother Suruchi, being mad and upon the death of his son, will go to search him out in the forest, but she will be devoured by a forest fire. Yeah, that was interesting because having insulted Dhruva Maharaj, Suruchi would become mad upon the death of her son and would enter the forest, thus her life would be ended. So there was, Prabhupada mentions, it was Vaishnava Aparad which ultimately devoured his stepmother. And of course, that was also mentioned because that was one of the desires of Dhruva Maharaj, to get the revenge. So he fulfilled that desire as well. From this we take the lesson that we should never try to insult a Vaishnava and they want revenge. Not only should we not insult a Vaishnava, we should not insult anyone unnecessarily. That stands for a good reason. So it's interesting that, you know, that desire was also fulfilled. You know, the Lord really he didn't hold back in fulfilling his desires, did he? There's a lesson in there as well. You know, one may consider, just like one may consider that someone has material opulence, and therefore consider them not a very significant devotee. And one may consider that a devotee who somehow becomes disturbed by harsh treatment is not a very significant devotee, that they should be more tolerant. If they were a better devotee, they'd be more tolerant. So let's not worry about offending them. But here, Dhruva Maharaj was, he wanted revenge, which in one sense you would consider, well, if he wants revenge, that's not really the sign of a very well-situated devotee. But it's not necessarily so. So, in other words, someone may think, oh, this devotee, gets really angry, when you disturb them. they're obviously not a very, you know, trained up devotee, so it doesn't matter if I disturb them because there'll be no really Vaishnava apparatus because they're not really an advanced devotee anyway. But I think that that's what I love. It's a sort of a dangerous mentality, isn't it? Because you don't know it, you know. Sort of dealing with it. So the best thing, as Prabhupada points out, the best thing is just don't offend anybody. Hang on. Yeah, we're looking at the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Prabhupada's discussion, trying to just clearly ascertain the nature of Dhruva Loka. You know. Yeah, I'll read you this commentary. He says, I give you that residence which is eternal, the Dhruva, possessing the zodiac belt of planets, constellations and stars, so it rules over them, possessing means it rules over them, which are like oxen circling around the central pillar to which they are tied. This place remains fixed for the duration of Brahma's life, for those living for that duration. At the time of final destruction, some say that Dhruva ascends to Mahavaikuntha. Some say that. Even though existing within the material universe, Dhruva Loka has the qualities of Svetadvipa, Mathura and Dwarka. Then he gives various verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam that what they state about, you know, having attained Vaikuntha. Verse 28 says that having attained the supreme abode of the merciful Lord, which is rarely attained, by worshipping the Lord's feet within one lifetime, and though he was knowledgeable, why did he consider himself unfulfilled? So verse 28 is describing that, you know, in that question, but it does show that he attained the supreme abode of the Lord. Right? So, so what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining, which as Prabhupada is explaining, is that attaining Dhruva Loka is attaining Vaikuntha. And we're just trying to describe what differences, if any, there may be between Dhruva Loka and Vaikuntha. But one thing we understand is that when we say Dhruva Loka, we can consider it to be Vaikuntha.
You can?
Yes. In verse 25, as you know, Bhakti Sahar pointed out, you will go to my abode, worshipped by all planets, higher than the Big Dipper, he puts it here, from which you will not return having gone there. It's another indication. You will go to my abode. That's, you know, this is Vaikuntha. In chapter 12, verse 26, he quotes, O Dhruva, stay in that abode of Vishnu, a place not achieved by your forefathers or any others, which is worshipped by the whole universe. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur then says, others say that Padastat means the Dhruva Loka remains beyond the lifespan of those lasting for Brahma's life, since the planet of the Lord is eternal. Dharma, Agni and others are the forms of, and then he, you know, as Prabhupada mentions the various, in his purport, you know, the abodes of Dharma, Agni, what have you. And when you're referring to them as stars, you refer to the constellations of Bharani, Kritika, you know, the various stars like that. So you can either call, you know, those planets that circumambulate, you know, the planet of Dharma and the planet of Agni, or you can call it Kritika, Bharani, you know, like that. But anyway, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur there describes that he's giving two scenarios that those who commentate upon the Bhagavatam describe. That this place, Dhruvaloka, remains fixed for the duration of Brahma's life, for those living for that duration. And at the time of final destruction, right, so when the whole Brahma's, you know, dies, the whole universe is wound up. In that sense, the pole star is wound up along with the universe, and at that time Dhruva ascends to Mahavaikuntha. Right? So that's one scenario that some say, that there is, you know, that Dhruva Loka or the pole star has the qualities of Vaikuntha while it's existing, but then, you know, if it's wound up along with the universe, then Dhruva would actually then go to Vaikuntha in the spiritual sky, another place. That other place, in essence, is non-different from Vaikuntha. You know, because, like, you know, if someone, you can say that if you go to Vrindavan, Boma Vrindavan here, there is no difference between Boma Vrindavan and Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. As Jiva Goswami gives his commentary in the Brahma Samhita, you know, the only difference is that, you know, one is considered up and one is lower, but they're actually the same place. You know, there's Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual sky and Gokul Vrindavan, you know, here, but they're actually the same place. But if someone, you know, is a resident or a Brajabasi here in Boma Vrindavan, when they leave their body, they may then go to the Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. In essence, they're really continuing the same pastimes, the same mood. They're with Krishna there, they're with Krishna here, but there is a transference to Krishna's spiritual abode in the upper. There is an upper and there is a lower. There's no distinction, they're the same place. But there is a transference from Gokul Vrindavan to Goloka Vrindavan. But in essence, that person, while he's in Gokul, is residing in the same place. But there's some transferred. So, you know, here the scenario is something like that. That the pole star in one sense is Dhruvaloka, where there may be some difference between the lower location of Dhruvaloka and the upper location. So, you know, we know that, you know, for instance, from the story of Markandeya Rishi, you know, when in the waters of devastation, he was swimming there in the waters of devastation. He came across, it was a Purushetra Dham. Purushottam Kshetra Dham, which is non-different from Jagannath Puri. You know, when the universe was destroyed, or, you know, partially, that Jagannath Puri remains. Although, you know, there is some difference, you know, between the Jagannath Puri that remains and some part which is changed, you know, because you know, there is by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, you know, the significance of the Dharmas in the material world is there is a conjunction between the material and spiritual energy. They don't actually mix, but the material and the spiritual energy are there. Therefore, you see that, you know, personalities can be in Vrindavan even while Krishna was there and not recognize that he is the Supreme Personality of God and not have love of God and not have the proper spiritual consciousness. They remain somewhat under Maha Maya, as described in the 10th canto, and others are purely in the spiritual influence. So there's a conjunction. Yoga Maya means that conjunction between the material energy and the spiritual energy. But you know, when the when there's annihilation of the material aspect, you know, the purely spiritual part may remain, which it may. So therefore, there may be some slight differences. So, in essence, you know, when the material world is wound up, all the dharmas remain. But how they're combined with the material energy differs, changes. Jiva Maharaj would have that quality like a dharma, you know. So, you know, that's one, you know, understanding of our acharyas, and you know, but then, you know, at the end he says that others say that parasat means the driva loka remains beyond the lifespan of those lasting for Brahma's life, since the planet of the Lord is eternal. So, in which case, so, you know, there's even here, it's it's not completely clear. Some things are completely clear, and then, you know, this is where, you know, we get Prabhupada's expertise. So let's look, you know, we'll look at some more commentaries there, and then we'll look at Prabhupada's purport, how he, you know, very expertly sums up all these different points.
Does it mean that Dhruva Loka essentially will remain, but it still will not be, it will still be wound up? It's at the end of Brahma's life, but it will be differently associated.
Let's hold that thought, hold that question, and we'll just look at a little bit more information on it. Yeah. We looked at these verses, verse 28, verse 25, and then there was 4, 12, 26. So far what we understand, of course, is that he is attaining you you know, he's attaining Vaikuntha either way. Commentary on that chapter 12, text number 26. Just see if it sheds any more light.
12:26.
Yeah. We can have a look at Prabhupada's commentary. We'll also have a look at Vishwanath Chakravarti, the cause.
Which one is the
one? Chapter 12. What can? 26.
Yeah. There's no commentary to that. You see that just jumping ahead a little bit in chapter 12, verse 21, you see that in verse 20, Dhruva Maharaj saw an aeroplane descend from the sky, illuminating all directions like the rising moon. In that airplane, he saw two persons, the best of Devas, dark in complexion, youthful, with four arms, etc. They were servants of the Lord, his principal associates. These same servants of the Lord, Sananda and Nanda, approached and spoke to him. We, associates of the Supreme Lord, Creator of all the universes and holder of the Sangha Bow, have come to take you to the boat of the Lord. You have attained the planet of Vishnu, difficult to achieve, which the David is seeker cannot attain. Stay there. The moon, sun and other planets, the constellations and stars circumambulate that supreme place clockwise. The Devadas and the seven sages, without attaining that place, look at it from below. The moon and other places turn around that planet. Stay in that supreme abode of Vishnu, a place not achieved by your forefathers or any others, which is worshipped by the whole universe. O immortal, you are qualified to board this excellent plane sent by the best of famous persons. So Maitreya said, on hearing the holy words of the two associates from Vaikuntha Dhruva, dear the Lord, took his bath, performed his daily rituals, offered respects to the sages, and then and blessed him. Circumambulating, worshipping the plane, offering respect to the two associates, assuming a golden form, he desired to board the plane. So, as he was ascending the Lord's planet, he remembered his mother Suniti. And then, so, it describes there that, you know, going to Dhruva Loka, you know,
is in fact see in verse 35, flying beyond the three worlds, he whose planet is Dhruvaloka arrived at the Lord's planet beyond the seven sages. So he arrived at the planet of Vishnu. He reached that shining planet by whose effulgence the three worlds shine, which those who are not merciful do not reach, but which those who constantly engage in good actions reach. Bhanu Swami here, you know, he gives a footnote that Dhruvaloka is situated above the sun but below Mahaloka. This is in the commentary to Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, canto 5, chapter 23, text number 9, if you want, you know. So let's maybe we can go there. We'll have a look at that as well. Who's got? I'll have a look. Let's we'll look at that. What did it say? 5:23:9. Let's have a look. Alright, so it says the body of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, which forms the Sushumna Chakra, is the resting place of all the demigods and all the stars and planets. Sushumna Chakra. One who chants this mantra to worship the Supreme Person three times a day, morning, noon, and evening, will surely be free from all sinful reactions. If one simply offers his obeisances to this form or remembers this form three times a day, all his recent sinful activities will be destroyed. So, purport. Summarizing the entire description of the planetary systems of the universe, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that one who is able to meditate upon this arrangement as the Virata Rupa or Vishwarupa, the external body of the Supreme, and worship him three times a day by meditation, will always be free from all sinful reactions. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur estimates that Dhruvaloka, the pole star, is 3,800,000 yojanas above the sun. Above Tapaloka by 120 million yojanas is Satyaloka. Hang on. Let's start again. Dhruvaloka is 3,800,000 yojanas above the sun. Above Dhruvaloka by 10 million yojanas is Mahaloka. And above Mahaloka by 20 million yojanas is Janaloka. Above Janaloka by 80 million yojanas is Tapaloka. And above Tapaloka by 120 million yojanas is Satyaloka. Thus the distance from the sun to Satyaloka is 233,800,000 yojanas, or 1,800,000 1,870,400,000 miles. The Vaikuntha planets begin 26,200,000 yojanas above Satyaloka. Thus, the Vishnu Purana describes that the covering of the universe is 260 million yojans away from the sun. The distance from the sun to the earth is 100,000 yojanas. And below the earth, by 70,000 yojanas, are the seven lower planetary systems called Patala, Vitala, Sutala, Tala, Mahatala, Ritala, Tala, and Patala. Below these planets, by 30,000 yojanas, Seshanaga is lying on the Gavadaka Ocean. That ocean is 249,800,000 yojanas deep. That's the total diameter of the universe, is approximately 500 million yojanas, or 4 billion miles. So, everyone got that? But, you know, the significant point here is that the Vaikuntha planets begin 26,200,000 yojanas, or let's say, you know, 209.5 million miles above Satyaloka. So Dhruvaloka is below the Vaikuntha planets that are situated within this material universe, right? No. There's Dhruvaloka, and above that then you have Maha, Jana, Tapa, Satya. And above Satya you have the Vaikuntha. With that, within this universe.
Yeah. So effectively Dhruva planet is below the
Vaikuntha planet.
Brahmaloka too.
Yeah.
Is Satyaloka same as Brahmaloka?
Yes.
So it's,
in
a sense, it's
still in
the material world.
Top of the material world.
No. Yes, but, you know, so there, you know, you have Vaikuntha. Now, when it says the Vaikuntha planets, I assume they're talking about Sveta
V. So the new portion, that Shiva Shaivishnu is also below Brahmaloka.
No, that appears to be where it describes that appears to be above, above Brahmaloka.
And that's not Dhruvaloka.
When you check verse 25 over there, it says that it's above the seven planetary system. It says
Dhruvaloka. Yes,
the Dhruvaloka?
It's above the seven planetary
system. And what verse are you looking at?
25. Chapter 9.
Yeah.
9.25.
Yeah.
And the 9.25 says that the Dhruva planet is above the seventh planet, which is really controlling of
it. Actually said it's the same as Shweta as the Milk Ocean.
Yes, so therefore, let's see. So let's read this whole verse. Verse 25. So we've heard a lot of different commentaries. Now we'll see how Prabhupada summarizes that in a way that, you know, we would then, you know, Prabhupada has this ability to take all these different points which are hard to, you know, they appear to be, you know, contradictory or what have you, but Prabhupada manages to put them all into one conclusive statement, you know, coherent statement. So we'll read this verse. In this verse, the word Navatate is very significant. The Lord says, you will not come back to this material world, for you will reach Matsdhanam, my abode. Now, we remember Vishwanath Chakravarti the core, that was he quoted that word. Oh, no, that was Padastati.
Therefore, Dhruvaloka, or the pole star, is the abode of Lord Vishnu within this material world. Upon it, there is an ocean of milk. So, Prabhupada is, describing Dhruvaloka as non-different from the Vaikuntha planets above Satyaloka. It is clearly indicated that this planet is situated above the seven planetary systems of the Rishis, and because this planet is Vishnu Loka, it is worshipped by all other planetary systems. Now, what will happen to the planet known as Dhruvaloka at the time of the dissolution of this universe? The answer is simple. Dhruvaloka remains like other Vaikunthas beyond this universe. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented in this connection that the very word Navatate indicates that this planet is eternal. So, let's summarise what we know so far. Dhruvaloka remains like other Vaikunthas beyond this universe. So when the whole universe is destroyed, we're talking about at the end of the universe, at the dissolution of this universe, Dhruvaloka remains. It's eternal. Now, it says it describes the seven planetary systems of the Rishis. It's not there when it says the seven planetaries of the Rishis. It's not saying the seven upper planetary systems. Yes. It's situated above the seven planetary systems.
But don't the Rishis live up there?
They do. The translation Bharani, Kritika, Cancer, Venus, the Big Dipper revolve around Dhruvaloka in a clockwise direction along with the stars. The zodiac planets, constellations, and stars revolve around it like oxen walking around the central pillar to the crane. So, Yeah, I mean, you know, there are, thank you, there are seven rishis. You know, when the you know, Vasistha, Kasyapa, you know, there are seven rishis who reside there, and there are seven stars. You know, that group of stars, seven stars. So, you know, there's seven planetary systems, upper planetary systems, but there's also seven stars. It's not all the planetary systems, but, you know, of the seven rishis. So, it depends which one you're actually referring to, you know. But here, Srila Prabhupada is, you know, concurring with Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti to cause commentary and, of course, other, you know, acharyas, that give you that residence which is eternal, possessing the zodiac belt of planets, constellations and stars, which are like oxen circling around the central pillar to which they are tied. This place remains for the duration of Brahma's life for those living for that duration. At the time of final destruction, some say that Dhruva ascends to Mahavaikuntha. Even though existing within the material universe, Dhruva Loka has the qualities as faded beat Mathura and Dwarka. So, the same comment Prabhupada is making, that, you know, Dhruva Loka, or the pole star, has the qualities of faded beat Mathura and Dwarka. We saw in the previous verse, you know, it did mention that, you know, it has the qualities Prabhupada mentions in the purport, like Svetadvip. You know, therefore, you know, in that purport, he didn't say it is Svetadvip, he says it has the qualities like Svetadvip. You know, that sentence leaves open that, you know, when you say something is like something, you know, it's like when, you know, was it Prishni and Satapa, you know, they prayed for an incarnation, and also was it Atreya Rishi, Atri. I want a son like the Lord, you know. As soon as you say, make that statement, you know, there's a, you know, there's a difference, you know. Prabhupada says, you know, that this Dhruva Loka has qualities like Svetadvip, Mathura and Dwarka. He doesn't say it's not different from Svetadvip, Mathura and Dwarka. Vishwanath Chakravarti, the course, is the same. Even though existing within the material universe, Dhruva Loka has the qualities of Svetadvip, Mathura and Dwarka. All of those planets are Vaikuntha planets. Dwarka, Mathura, Svetadvip, that's Vaikuntha. They're all Vaikuntha planets. Dwarka is Vaikuntha. You know, they're Vaikuntha planets. Krishna Loka is a Vaikuntha planet. It's the topmost Vaikuntha planet. It's where Krishna resides, who is non different from Narayan. You know, Goloka Vrindavan is a Vaikuntha planet. It's the topmost planet. So, therefore, when you say that Dhruva Maharaj The Dhruva Loka has the qualities of Svayadvip, Mathura or Dwarka. You're saying it has the qualities of Vaikuntha, which means it's Vaikuntha. Right? So, but it's not necessarily saying it's that exact Vaikuntha planet. It's not saying, you know, has the same qualities, but it's not necessarily saying, you know, it has the exact, it is exactly like we could say, oh, the pole star's Dwarka. No, or the pole star's Mathura, or the pole star's Svayadvip. You could say it's that exact Vaikuntha place. It's saying it's got the qualities of those, like those, but there's a, when you say it has the qualities like those, it means it's a different station, a different Vaikuntha station. So, like that. So that statement is there, in, what was that, verse 21. It's qualities like, now, here, Prabhupada says very clearly, Dhruva Loka, or the pole star, is the abode of Lord Vishnu within this material world. Upon it there is an ocean of milk, and within that ocean there is an island known as Svayadvip. So here Prabhupada is, you know, saying quite clearly that you can consider that this pole star, which is Vaikuntha, is non-different from the Svayadvip Vaikuntha planet within this universe. So here he's saying something quite clearly that it's non-different from that. So, and then of course in the Bhagavad Gita we see in, you know, chapter, canto 5, text number 9, that is very clearly described by Vishnu and Chakravarti the core. As Bhanuswami comments, you know, Bhanuswami's little footnote in within his descriptions of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments, he says, refer to this, that Dhruva Loka, or the pole star, is physically situated above the sun, and above Dhruva Loka is Maha Loka, then Jana Loka, Tapa Loka and Satya Loka. You know, it's saying quite clearly that these planetary systems of the Rishis, if you put it that way, are above the pole star. By, you know, physically, by so many miles, yojanas. And then above that we get to the Vaikunthas, or what we know as, you know, what we call Svayadvip. So,
so basically, Prabhupada is saying that Dhruva Loka is, it is still not different from Vishnu Loka, but it is not the same planet where Sri Ramachandra resides. That is still above. Whereas Dhruva Loka is below the planet of the seven trees.
Well, let's put it this way. For instance, when Lord Brahma was called to see Krishna in Dwarka, and Brahma got to the door and the doorkeeper said, "Oh, which Brahma is here?" And you know, Brahma said, "Oh, the four-headed Brahma, you know, of course, you know." And he said, "Oh, you know." So then he was let in, and then, you know, he asked, "Why did you inquire which Brahma?" And he says, "Oh, you know, there's so many universes and so many Brahmas in each universe. Some had 10 heads, some had 10 million heads, you know, like this." So then he called the Brahmas. Each Brahma on their loka. You know, each Brahma from there, you know, came from Satyaloka.
From their
Satyaloka. So from their loka, they went to the Dwarka, which is a Vaikuntha planet. Within their universe, and they all come and bow their head at Krishna's lotus feet. And four-headed Brahma watched, because the Dwarka, the abode of Dwarka, which is situated within our universe, is also situated within every other universe. But in their universe, they, you know, went to Dwarka within their universe and saw the same Krishna that our four-headed, because, you know, it's the same Dwarka. You know, it's a Vaikuntha planet. It's a, you know, it's a, like the Lord is all pervasive, omnipresent. His planet, you know, his abode can exist within every universe, but it's the same abode. So therefore, if we say that, you know, therefore, for instance, on the pole star, it's possible that Dhruva Maharaj can, you know, perceive the Svetadvip on his pole star planet, even though it may be situated in a higher part of the universe. That's possible. See what I mean? In the same case with Lord Brahma. So we sort of got to be careful of taking this from a material perspective. That, oh, we're saying that, you know, the Svetadvip situated up there, but then they're saying that the pole star is non-different, but that's situated lower. But there's no reason why Svetadvip could not be situated on the pole star and in the Vaikuntha and the higher planetary systems, in the same way that Dwarka, or any Vaikuntha planet, is in fact situated within every universe. What to speak of, you know, a couple of different planets.
How did the four-headed Brahma see that he saw it in this universe?
What's that?
The four-headed Brahma saw all the other Brahmas in this universe.
Yes, that's because they came to Dwarka. Had they not come to Dwarka, because he was in Dwarka, therefore, you know, Dwarka has this, you know, it doesn't have the material qualities. So Krishna allowed him to come to Dwarka, and that Dwarka is situated within all the universes. So if you go, yeah, if you go to Svetadvip, then wherever the Lord is manifesting Svetadvip, you know, he can allow you. Like when Brahma goes to Dwarka, he doesn't necessarily all the time see the Lord's activities in each and every universe. But if the Lord allows him to, he can see all the Brahmas coming there. So, you know, we have to be careful of seeing things from a material perspective. See what I mean? So, you know, the pole star is a planet which is physically situated below what we know as the Vaikuntha planet, but at the same time, it's non-different from that Vaikuntha planet, and therefore Dhruva has access to it on his planet, somehow or another.
Basically, it's the omnipresence of the Lord.
It's the omnipresence of the Dham and the Lord. Yeah. The Lord's in his Dham. So, if you know, if the Lord's omnipresent and he's always in his Dham, then his Dham's omnipresent, you know. So, if the Lord allows him to. So, you know, it's not wrong to say that this, the Dhruva Loka is non-different from Svetadvip. And it's also not wrong to say that, you know, Dhruva Loka or the pole star is differently situated than Svetadvip. But, as, you know, spiritually, materially it may be differently situated, but spiritually it's not. That's the point. Materially we might consider the pole star and Svetadvip to be situated in different parts of the universe, but spiritually they're not. Right? In the same way that we may consider that materially that from one universe there's one here and there's one over there, and that materially we may therefore consider that there's a material difference between Dwarka in our universe and the Dwarka in the next universe. There'd be a material distance. But spiritually there's no distance. that. So, you know, this is what we're having trouble with.
It's something like a temple of... You can say that, you know, a temple is in the physical realm, you know, material world, but actually it's Goloka.
That's what Prabhupada said when he was here in Melbourne. Don't think it's not different from Vrindavan. Don't think it's different from Vrindavan.
But physically,
you can say it is in Melbourne. Yeah, we can say we're so many thousands of miles from Vrindavan, but you know there is a material distance which you can calculate to the centimeter, millimeter. But spiritually, there's no distance. You know, and this is so. Therefore, these statements appear contradictory, something different. But you know, and this is the expertise of Prabhupada, of course, that you know he does. Because he sees things from the spiritual platform, you know, he puts it in plain language, you know, that, you know, this is Svaita Dvipa, like that. So, in other words, the main point which we probably would miss, he's making sure we're going to get it by just stating it quite clearly.
That is not different
from Svaita Dvipa. Even though materially there may be some calculable distance in this universe.
I think that Brahma example really...
It helps. Yeah.
So, in case of the final resolution, with all these namas, like this temple, also the other. Sorry, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Or will it still remain?
Don't confuse me. While we're on the roll, let's.
I think that's applicable to only Vrindavan.
What's that?
It's applicable only to Vrindavan.
This is Vrindavan, this temple. Prabhupada said that when he was here. He said, don't think that this, you're living in Melbourne. You know, it's your consciousness. You know, this is not different from Vrindavan. Your consciousness, if you're Krishna conscious, it's not different from Vrindavan. If this is not different from Vrindavan, it's not annihilated at the time of dissolution. But, you know, at the time of dissolution, if we were like Markandeya Rishi or even a partial dissolution, and, you know, we were floating around in the ocean of devastation, we may not necessarily see the bricks of Melbourne Temple, but we would, you know, recognize Radha Ballabha. Oh, here are the deities, but they may have a different setting, which is, you know, and we would understand, oh, I was thinking I was in Melbourne worshipping you, Radha Ballabha, but actually I see that, you know, I was actually in, you know, Vrindavan. So we might realize that better. All right. So, how are we going for time? 4:25. But it takes a lot of meditation, doesn't it, you know, to really... You can't just casually read through the Bhagavatam and, you know, you've really got to, you know, sit and discuss with devotees, you know, amongst ourselves. You know,
we're still looking at it materially. At least I'm
that's the thing. You know, you can read the Bhagavatam, and if you maintain some material consciousness, there's a lot you'll miss, or you may think that there's some mistakes there or something. You know, but you really have to, you know, the Bhakti Bhai Bhava, the Bhakti Shastri, these study things that they're not just meant to physically, you know, or to intellectually understand the books. But it's actually helping us to come to a spiritual level of consciousness whereby, you know, the understanding does manifest. So, you know, you actually have to develop the Vaishnava qualities, the Vaishnava activities, and you have to please Krishna and not, you know, commit, you know, aparas to Krishna or his devotees. And then, you know, the proper understanding will come. I just while it comes to mind, in case I don't forget, one Vaishnavi departed last night. It was Gandharvika.
Yeah.
Gandharvika, does everyone knows her? Everyone knows her, big singer.
Yeah.
She used to always sing whenever she's in Gopal around.
Yes.
In a big word, Gopal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had the
Bhujan
Maharaj, so
we are speaking. Yeah, we some of us went to, we did an Abhishek for Gaurnathai at Mahajan, who's now Sudarshan Nitai Guranga. That's his new name. Yeah. Sudarshan Nitai Guranga is it? Nitai. Yeah, it's Sudarshan Nitai Guranga. Okay. So, yeah. But everyone's still raising their mind. But yeah, and Bhujan Prabhu was there, Jagatrini Mataji. So we did a program. I got home at about 1 a.m. You got home about 11:15. Yeah. But she left her body around about 11 p.m. last night. So, you know, it would have been up just pretty much very close after the Abhishek and discussion, so it was very auspicious. And what's that? I'm not sure. I haven't heard. I haven't heard any details of her passing. But that's what I said. I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything yet. but yeah, she was known as Wendy Saddington, when she was. I think she was originally above and under. Yeah.
She's been in the movement since 1970.
Yeah. No, not yet. Yeah. She's, I used to have a poster of her when I was a teenager on my wall. Yeah. Because she was a really good singer, sort of pop singer. So there was a magazine, it was a sort of a newspaper type rock and roll magazine used to come out. It's called Go Set. So, they used to have a big poster every week. I used to, she was in it. She used to have this big frizzy hair coming out. What's that? I'm not sure. I assume she was probably, 5 to 10 years older than me. Probably, probably 60, 65, somewhere between 60 and 65, I imagine. She used to sing very loudly, of course. And some devotees, used to get that disturbed. Whenever I used to hear her singing loudly, I used to think, I wish, because I've got two sisters, and I thought, I wouldn't care how my sisters sang, if they just come and sang in the temple, it'd make me happy, And it wouldn't bother with me whether they sang out of tune or too loud or too quiet or, just please come. But they don't, of course. But, so whenever someone does, we always have to, consider, the wonderful thing is that they're chanting Hare Krishna. I remember I did a festival on the farm for Govardhan Puja, and I got her and Les to do a couple of songs, and I remember saying she won't need a microphone.
she used to kind of slow her car. She would go a bit off beat, she used to slow down the kids.
She did a few funny things, but the other day I was here at the temple, and there was a little old lady, Ethel. She was probably about 75, 80 years old. She came in because Gandharvika used to go to the hospitals and places like that, or the food kitchens and, all sorts of things, and give out the maha garlands and prasad. And she just talked with people and, just make them happy and tell them a little bit about Krishna and that. And this very elderly lady come in the other day, sort of with her walking stick. She, you know, they have the thick red lipstick as they used to wear in the old days, like that, you know. And she was asking about her, but you know, Gandharvaka asked her, you know, you please, you know, just once, you know, you come to the temple, you know, like that. So she did that. She came to the temple just to please Gandharvaka. When she heard she was ill, then she made a point where she asked me, I'm going to go to the temple like that. But yeah, there's a huge amount of people who probably we don't even know about, that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them, you know, who is somehow a little bit attached to Krishna, you know, because of her sort of preaching, which, you know, is probably, you know, very little known. You know, she did things very quietly, you know, like that. You wouldn't even know she was preaching, but she did actually a massive amount of preaching. But the people that she, you know, she would preach to people who were, I guess, you know, there's high profile sort of preaching where you get people who are, you know, they become the you sort of, oh, you know, I was preaching to the mayor, I was preaching to the leader of this thing, or, you know, but you know, she was just preaching because they were a spirit soul. There's no big high profile, but you know, there's an opportunity to preach. So there's a massive amount of preaching she did. So it was a very sad loss for a lot of people. A lot of people, you know, once she's gone, all those hundreds and hundreds of people that she was contacting, you know, may not sort of, you know, have a contact. You know. But anyway, I just thought, you know, while it came to my mind, I wanted to mention it, and everyone should offer some prayers on her behalf, that you know, Lord Krishna will, you know, take it to his lotus feet somewhere. So let's get back to chapter 9. Alright, so we heard that after offering him his abode, Lord Vishnu on the back of Garuda returned to his abode as Dhruva Maharaj looked on. Prabhupada says, from this verse it appears that Lord Vishnu awarded Dhruva Maharaj the same abode in which he resides. His abode is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Yad Gadva Nandravatante Tad Dharma Paramam Mama. And, you know, we also have to remember that, you know, the particular form of the Lord who appeared before Dhruva Maharaj was Prishnigarbha. And that, as far as I understand, it is that form of the Lord Prishnigarbha, the Lord that Dhruva would worship on Dhruva Loka. Okay, so Dhruva, you know, Vidura inquires that Dhruva has achieved this position in one lifetime. Why was he not very pleased? Maitreya answered. that Dhruva Maharaj's heart, which was pierced by the arrows of his of the harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly grieved, and thus, when he fixed upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehaviour. He did not demand actual liberation from this material world, but at the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Lord appeared before him, he was simply ashamed of the material demands he had in his mind. So he was not very pleased, of course, because he was ashamed of those material demands. Verse 30. So he's understood that he's achieved this great position of shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, that he achieved that result within 6 months. Yet due to my thinking differently from the Lord, I fell down from my position. So that, you know, this just further describes this. He was under the spell of the material energy and wanted to take revenge against his stepmother and rule over his father's kingdom. Dhruva Maharaj greatly lamented his propensity for ruling the material world and his revengeful attitude towards other living entities. So he's disturbed that he's praying for things which are perishable. And it says in verse 32, since all the demigods who are situated in the higher planetary system will have to come down again, they're all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of sage Narada. Papa mentions in his purport, as shown by many instances in the Vedic literature, when a person undergoes severe austerities, the demigods become very much perturbed because they're always afraid of losing their post as the predominating deities of the heavenly planets. It is a fact that the demigods control the different activities of the limbs of our bodies. Dhruva Maharaj's conclusion is that these demigods, being envious of his superior position in devotional service, conspired against him to pollute his intelligence, and thus, although he was the disciple of the great Vaishnava, Narada, he could not accept Narada's valid instructions. And now Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he had neglected these instructions. Narada had asked him, why should you bother about insult or adoration from your stepmother? Dhruva Maharaj regretted that he had rejected the advice of Narada Muni and was adamant in asking him for something perishable, namely revenge against his stepmother for her insult. and possession of a kingdom of his father. That's a very interesting verse there. You ever notice that you know, when you put a massive amount of work into something, some project, some job, some studies, you know, like whether it be trying to finish a course at university, you know, trying to establish a home, trying to set up a new business, there's a massive amount of, and sometimes, you know, one's intelligence can be it's almost like undermined, so that getting that last result becomes, it's like the rug's just pulled out, and it's, your intelligence or the intelligence of someone, it can be a family member or a partner, someone you're depending upon to help you. Their intelligence maybe is, if our intelligence is fixed, their intelligence is, sort of undermined. So the whole thing just, you can't quite, achieve this something great. Anyone? I've noticed. Yeah. It's, not necessarily that our activities are so, going to get the demigod shaken in their boots. Oh, look out, he's going to get the, he's going to get his new house, or, he's going to get that degree or what have you. But, devotional activities, devotional activities, they're quite significant. We see that the demigods do, look upon the activities of devotees. So therefore, especially the activities, the activities of devotees in general can actually be quite significant. Even the, the way a devotee may try to establish their family, business, home, career, credentials, what have you, in order to support their devotional service, that's quite significant, because the devotional aspect, the devotional service aspect, we hear that when someone takes sannyas, the sannyasis say that Maya increases her, pressure like 100, times. And I remember there was, in the 80s, there was one sannyasi, and he said to another sannyasi, he said, I've heard that, that when you take sannyas, that, Maya increases her attack on you like 100-fold. He said, I haven't felt that. And another sannyasi said to him, oh, Maya's just rolling up the sleeves at the moment. And sure enough, that devotee was, attacked by Maya, and,
there's an expression for lull before the storm.
The lull before a storm, that's right, yeah. Or, Maya's rolling up the sleeves is another way to put it. But, anyway, there are various obstacles here. Dhruva Maharaj is considering, it's something to consider. It's not, as we say, not that our activities are so significant, but sometimes it's because we're doing devotional service, it's the devotional service which is quite significant and quite rare. And, it's possible to get other living entities within the universe, both even from higher or sometimes lower, to put significant obstacles in your way that, all this, they're not going to become, here, Dhruva Maharaj, of course, he's thinking, that the demigods, they're thinking that, he may attain, he may get our position, because And actually for devotees, you know, to attain the heavenly planets and to attain a position within the heavenly society is actually not, you know, that's an easy thing, actually. So it's quite possible that, you know, it's the devotional aspect of it that makes the activities quite significant. And, you know, there may be sometimes...
what do you mean when you said that from higher or lower, you know, people try to put obstacles, people are envious of people and activity?
Yeah.
I mean, among devotees?
Yeah, you know, that... well, demigods are devotees. Well, that's what drew them out. It actually comes up a few times in the Bhagavatam that, you know, that the demigods, they're devotees, but they do become sometimes envious that someone is progressing too much, too good, too well. And it becomes a threat to them. And they can, you know, with whatever facility that they have for control, they can actually put some obstacles in the path. Yes, definitely. Yeah, a devotee has nothing to fear. But if a devotee is not properly situated under the protection, taking Krishna's protection, then, you know, there are various living entities, both above and below, who can actually, be a little envious and, you know, demigods. You know, it's like there was that one of Pandu's brother, Chitrangada. There was a demigod who had the same name, and he killed him or something because he had the same. Oh, he's got my name. For that, Chitrangada. I think it was Chitrangada. Was it Vyasadeva's brother? There was there was Vyas, Pandu, and Chitrangada. Vyas had to conceive the child to keep the dynasty going. Pandu had died, Chitrangada had died. And that left Vyas to conceive in the womb of his brother's wife, Madri. Was that Vichitra? Vichitraviri, is it? Maybe that's it, yeah. Vichitraviri, yeah, okay, Vichitraviri. That's it. There's a chitra in there somewhere. Vichitraviri.
Maya is nothing but demigod.
Yes. Maya
means demigod. That is a real demigod. We don't know where they
are. Everyone that's controlled by the material energy is Maya.
Maya means that the job is to pull them.
Yeah, so, you know, Maya's agents can be, sometimes she can utilize her agents can be those who are controlled by the mode of goodness, those who are controlled by the mode of passion, or those who are controlled by the mode of ignorance, but they're all controlled by Maya, so therefore it's Maya can attack.
And
you know,
33 million in number, not small number.
Prabhupada says, you know, that's right, when you try to become a devotee and go back to Godhead, you declare war on Maya.
But every day, sir.
You know, yeah.
Maya has said that
Yeah. Maya's, you know, Maya's just testing us that, you know, that, you know, as Prabhupada puts it, is this person, you know, just want to be an upstart and you know, actually just give so much trouble to Krishna, or they, you know, really want to serve Krishna, and she can just, you know, she'll think, oh, I think the person may be a bit of an upstart, and you know, that they're making a show of wanting to serve Krishna, but really, you know, there's something else, and then she'll just throw some allurement there, or you know, and also, you know, the intelligence can be bewildered. In different ways. You know, something can happen at, you know, at a certain time, a split second, like, you know, you can be walking past someone from the opposite sex. She thinks you're, you know, her ex-boyfriend. Oh, hi, you know. And then, you know, you're thinking, oh, gee, she really likes me, you know. Gee, the women think I'm really attractive today. And then as she walks off, she thinks, oh, that was the wrong guy. But you're walking up the water, gee, you know, they really, you know. You know, it's like within a split second, your mind can become bewildered by something, you know. And you just, you know, whatever.
That is one of my
problems. That is my problem. That's the reason. Yeah. Anyway. You know, in the course of a day, you know, usually everyone's telling you how bad you do things, and then, you know, one day, you know, in succession, you might get a dozen people saying, gee, you really do things well. You know, it's like, you know, you can get a little proud and puffed up, and, you know, and that, you know, you, things can happen that can bewilder you, you know. You know, people can say things that you can take the wrong impression from. Do things, you know, so you can actually be bewildered, and then in that state of bewilderment, you can then be allured, entrapped, so many different. So he says, I was under the influence of the illusory energy, being ignorant of the actual facts. I was sleeping on the lap of the witch called Myers, back when I had the courses. Under a vision of duality, I saw my brother as my enemy, and falsely I lamented within my heart, thinking they are my enemies. My activities were exactly like treatment given to a person who is already dead. For in spite of meeting the Supreme Lord who can cut one's link with birth and death, I have prayed for the same conditions again. Although the Lord offered me his personal service, I wanted material name, fame and prosperity. You know, like a person, as he says, a great emperor wants to give him anything he might ask, and he asks for a few grains of husk rice.
Who does he refer to when he says treatment given to someone already dead? Himself, or?
Yeah. So those verses, you know, 32 to 35, what do you got? Another preaching application there, of course, we're talking about a preaching application that we do come across people who have material desires, so therefore, you know, one is that we have to be, you know, we encourage them, you know, even though you have material desires, come along and, you know, serve the Supreme Lord, because you can, you know, it's still you're better off to worship the Supreme Lord, you know. Because he can fulfill your desires, and you know, if he does, he'll do it in such a way that it'll be beneficial for you both materially and spiritually. And you know, he's extremely powerful, unlimitedly powerful. And another thing, of course, in our, so that's one thing. And another way that we preach also is that although we're encouraging people, come along, you have material desires, just chant, you know, worship Krishna. There's no loss; you can only be gained. But at the same time, our preaching ability is to gradually help them to see, like Dhruva Maharaj does, that, you know, yes, you can ask from Krishna anything you like, but, you know, does that make good sense? I quite often, when I'm doing a jagya or a ceremony, I like to tell the story of the lady with the sticks. It really hits home to a lot of people, you know, because many people who come to do a ceremony, jagya or samskara, they want their child to grow up to be rich and wealthy and have a good, you know, husband and, you know, wife or what have you like that, have a big house and, to, you know, have a big career and be well. They're coming along to get blessings, you know, to get that child to become as materially well situated as, you know. You know, they want the blessings of God for many material things that they've got planned for that child. And I like to tell them that story about the lady with the sticks on her back that, you know, that Prabhupada tells, you know, she, that was her job, carrying a huge load of sticks, and she would sell them. She was very, very poor. It was very difficult work. And of course, one day, you know, after a very, very difficult day, you know, the sticks fell off her back and she was just lamenting, and she prayed to God, you know, please help me. And God actually appeared before her and said, you know, yes, I'll give you any benediction. She said, oh, you please help to put those sticks back on my back. And, you know, I find that when you tell that story, people just click that, yes, well, I've done that. We're coming to the temple, you know. And then you explain to them, of course, that, you know, you know, you can ask the Lord, you know, to help you to be, not have to take birth again in the material world, but to return to the eternal spiritual world, you know. And they quite often realize, oh, gee, you know, we've come to the temple, we haven't even thought of asking for that, you know, that we can actually ask while we're here, you know, asking for our son to, you know, do all these things which might make him happy in this life, but continues. Why don't we, while we're here and we're doing the ceremony, we'll also ask if he can actually be a devotee and go back to Godhead. And it clicks to them. Yes, let's ask for that as well. You know. So, you know, therefore, we encourage people and we don't, you know, just say, make them feel, you know, dirty and bad, you know, all the dirty things in your heart. What are you asking for this little baby? You want this little baby to be rich, don't you? You know, get that filth out of your heart, you know. We don't make them feel like they want to run away from the temple and, you know, think, oh, you know, like, you know, like that. We sort of have to, well, you know, it's actually good. You know, it's very, according to the Bhagavad Gita, the fact that they've come to Krishna to pray, even for material things, it's a wonderful thing. You know, it's actually very good. But while they're doing that, pray also that, you know, after they've been satisfied, you know, in this lifetime, that I can also make progress, or the child can make progress back to the spiritual world as well. You know, don't forget to ask for that, like that as well. And in the long run, that's probably the only thing you really need. So, you know, this is preaching techniques. We learned from Dhruva that, you know, even though he had material desires, there's no bar from anyone. They can all go back to Godhead. But we should remind them we should not make them feel bad. Oh, this is not the place for you. Once you go down to the church down the road where they pray for their daily bread, you know, we're just pure devotees here. We, you know, we don't want any of that stuff, and I'm not doing this ceremony. That's it. Out. You know.
That's why I make such comments on
Facebook. But, you know, I know that some devotees who have done ceremonies and yajnas and what have you have complained, you know, that, you know, I don't like doing this because, you know, these people, they're not like devotees, they're just asking for all these material things, and you know what I mean? But our job, we know that they want material things, but if they're asking for Krishna, that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, you know, that's what Krishna says in the Gita, they're pious people, they're good. But we should just add a little something. Therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the wise should not unsettle the minds of those who are attached or ignorant, but should encourage them in such a way that they can dovetail their activities in Krishna consciousness. That's there in the Bhagavad Gita, 249. So good preaching. I remember, I took one boy. One of the Indian boys, he said, oh, can I tag along one day? And I said, yes. And so he jumped in the car, and we went out to this people's home. You know, some of the homes I go to, they're really opulent, you know. Very opulent, you know. It's like walking into the Taj Mahal. But, you know, when he walked into that place, he was like, oh, you know, and the he saw the TV. I was going to put the jug in, and he saw the TV. It wasn't on or anything, and he said to you know, I was just getting my things out of the box, and I heard him talking to the owner of the house. He's going, you're going to have to move that, you know, like moving a TV, and he had to unplug all the things, and he wanted to put it in the other side of the room, and the guys are. And I said to him, oh, no, that's, you know, he said, is there any service? He said, I'm worried about these people. There's like, you know, Ganga, you know, what have you got me into? I said, he engaged me, said, oh, you want to sit down and read some verses from the Bhagavad Gita? So he sat down, he's reading some verses, and then they come up and they offered him some water. Would you like a drink of water? Oh, no, I can get that at the temple. That's, you know. But, I won't. But, he knows that I told this. He knows because I actually told this story one time in Bhagavatam class, and he heard it. And he'd come up, you know, he said to me, he said, oh, I have to thank you, Ganga, because you know, you actually taught me so much, you know, like, and he said that my headspace was somewhere else, but so, you know, but I don't advertise his name, but he knows I've used it as an example, but he knows that no one knows who it is. Yes. It was like he walked into the heart of Maya. And that he was going to just like, oh my God, you know, these people are going to contaminate me. They're so materialistic, you know. I don't want anything to do with them, you know. Yeah, he was. He was actually fearful of being contaminated and, you know, by the material opulence. And, you know, they were very materialistic people. But at the same time, you know, they wanted someone to worship Krishna, you know, in their home, and that's what I'm saying. That's why this is a preaching application. We learn, you know, from what Dhruva is saying, and the Gita, that, you know, we can invite people even though they have strong, you know, material desires and motivations, that, you know, if they're coming to Krishna for any reason, it's good. And we should make them feel good. I have noticed, you know, I've mentioned this before, but in some parts of ISKCON we have the incredible ability to make everyone, you know, at any stage of the devotional service, to make them feel deficient. You know, even today, you know, the devotees who make me, you know, like after 35 years, you know, you'd think you'd feel good about something, but even today, you know, the devotees who, you know, still make me feel like, oh God, what the hell are you doing? I mean, you know, it's like, I had a dream the other night, because, you know, that happens, and it was such a nice dream. I was sitting with Prabhupada on a couch, and then I fell asleep. And when I fell asleep, I put my arm on Prabhupada and I rested my head on his shoulder, and then I woke up, you know, after about 10 or 15 minutes, and Prabhupada was just sitting, and I thought, gee, he's so kind, he's just let me fall asleep on him, like that. And then he leaned over and he just looked at me, you know, in his eyes. He said, Ganga, you feel like you've lost something. And there's a sentiment of fear, but actually what you want is right there in your lap. Right there, yeah. He said, you know, but he sensed that there was some deficiency. I was feeling deficiency, and you know, sometimes I was talking about this, which sometimes you know, you can, there's an anxiety or a fear that's, you know, everything is wrong, and therefore you don't see what's right. And that's what Prabhupada was saying. He's saying, you know, you've got this sense that something's lost or something's wrong, but actually everything you want is right there, come with, you know, it's like that. It's a very nice dream. But, you know, it's the same message that's here in the Bhagavatam, that, and in preaching, you know, we should make people feel good, you know, at every stage, rather than, you know, to make them feel that at any stage of their devotional services, somehow, nah, that's still not good enough. You're still not at the grade, you know. Nah, that's not, you know. So, you know, you're not good enough because you've got material desires. Okay, then I'll give up those material desires. I'm chanting 16 rounds. But you're not initiated, you know. You're not really. All right, I've taken an initiation like that, you know. You know, you're wasting your life. You know, you're really serious about it. You should take Brahman. You know, take some responsibility. Oh, you know, so I've taken Brahman. Oh, you're taking Brahman doing this, but you know, what is your big preaching service? What is your position? You have no real position. Oh, you know, I've got a position. Oh, you're a position man. You know, that's what you join as me. You just want a position. Oh, I'll take sannyas. Oh, sannyas. You know, oh, yeah. Who do you think you are? You know, you think you're above all of us, do you? You know. So, you know, you can, you know, sometimes, you know, in ISKCON's history, you know, some places are worse than others, but, you know, I do notice that tendency that some people can go right through our movement for many, many years, and at every stage, somehow or another, we're always making them feel deficient or bad about what they're doing. But you know, from the very beginning, you know, we should be encouraging them and making them feel good, you know, about what they do. Actually, a boy came up to me this morning and said that, you know, he had some difficulty chanting his rounds, like he's just started chanting and then he sort of slipped back a little bit, and he said, you know, I feel really, really bad. And I said, look, I said, Prabhupada describes, you know, you have to understand the rarity of trying to do something in devotional service, how rare and wonderful it is. Prabhupada describes all devotees as basically kings and queens. And Sureshwara quoted that same quote, you know, it's just a little comment he made in one of his conversations. But I said to him, like, sometimes a king, you know, or a queen can have a bad day. They're still the king and the queen, you know. So devotees are like that. They may have their ups and downs, but their position is always, you know, like they're above the karmis and the karma yogis and the jnanis and the sangha yogis, you know. Even when they're having difficulty, they're actually, you know, so we should be therefore, you know, always trying to encourage them. We can push them. It is a pushing movement in the sense that we push them, but that's always done by developing a relationship where, you know, they feel this person appreciates, you know, this person is not critical of me. They have a loving relationship. They, you know, like that. Then we can give them a little nudge in the right direction, which again, Sureshwara pointed out. Someone mentioned that to him, that this is a pushing movement. And he said, but without a relationship, it doesn't really work, you know. So we develop that relationship by showing appreciation, you know, for what they are doing, you know. And then we can give them a little push, you know, tell them the story about the lady of the sticks, about don't forget to, you know, you can improve like this. All right. Thank you. Hare Krishna. We'll see you. So, now, Naveen has got presents for everyone. He's like a local Santa Claus. Yeah, he's got the student's handbook for Module 2, my copy, which I've sort of edited a little bit, so you can give him your email addresses, and you know, if he hasn't already got them, he'll send it to you.
So is it different to what
previous lecture modules
they have?
Yeah, the one I gave you was the one that I get from the institute, but there are some things that are not there that they want me, or, you know, to complete. And this is the updated one, so you know, it's got all the summaries and different things like that. But yeah, mostly it's the same, but there's a few little things. There were some other things that I wanted to tweak, but, you know, that's pretty much close enough here. Yeah. It's got all the slokas and, you know, everything. All right. Next time we meet, we will do chapter 10.
Chapter 10?
Yeah. You know, there's some of this chapter to go, but please read chapter 10 as well.
Did you get a chance to see the
I've got it with me. Are you here this evening?
Yes.
Yeah. Can I see you perhaps in
you'll be here.